Venstre fot i Norge, lifter hun med noen tegn av fjær, Birker! Aljevne! Birker Bjetlason! Aljevne! Firakur Islendinga! Perel! Sier alle kurer! Mjög unger! Birker, Birker, Birker! Setter han av volleyen nu i fjæret fram av Patricio! Portugal 8, Island 8!
You're listening to the 200% podcast. With Ian King and Edward Carter.
Greetings, pod fans, and welcome to a special, super special Euro 16 edition.
Well, it's not that special, is it?
No, it's not really. We're currently watching Belgium and Ireland play, which, you know, it feels like it's, you know, last day of school or something, because we're getting to watch a film.
Is that what you did on the last day of school? On the last
day
of
school? At primary school, yeah.
We used to take games.
Oh, yeah, we did that, yeah.
We didn't watch a film.
Well, sometimes we did and sometimes we didn't. I have to say, they were always awful films.
Oh, right, okay. Like, we usually had James Bond films.
But we
didn't used to have them on the
last
day.
One year we watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, right.
One year we watched Labyrinth. And I know, you know, David Bowie and all that, but, and you know, and Jim Henson and all that. But
yeah.
Face it, dog shit. And The Neverending Story was the worst. Never has a film so aptly been titled. But, yeah, so it feels a little bit special. To the point that I've forgotten what number we are, and therefore...
I haven't got a question anyway.
Yeah.
I know what this is.
Okay.
This is our summer special.
Oh, the summer special.
This is like, yeah. You know, like children's comics
Beano.
Used to do a summer special.
Wizard and Chips.
Yeah, and it was like bigger than the normal
summer
one.
Seaside special.
Yeah, so it's like that.
But yeah, Belgium are running Ireland ragged, aren't they?
Yeah, I was going to say, might not feel like it's a summer special if you happen to be Irish at the moment, because this is not going according to plan.
I can't tell whether or not this is the Belgian renaissance and this is the level that Belgium were, you know, expected to play at, or whether Ireland are just terrible.
Well, I'll put it this way. They're just about to bring on Robbie Keane.
It's true. He's got him out
of his
bath. I don't
know. I think we both know what side of the argument that falls on.
He's just shutting the door of his bath. And he's got... Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult to see Ireland progressing, particularly from this, considering that, of course, they've got Italy in their last match.
Yep. It's so weird. They played okay against Sweden. I mean, I know that Sweden were terrible,
and they were even worse against Italy yesterday.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
I had a spicy meatball of a comment for that game.
Oh yeah,
which is I was watching it at work, and in the distance, I first thought, "Oh, look at that! This looks like the 1970 World Cup final."
Did a bit.
And then after about 5 minutes of watching it, I thought, oh, actually, no, this is 1994 World Cup final. I was disappointed.
Yeah, it was very bright and colourful, and the only thing that was left
it
in
was
the
a,
dressing room was the football.
Yeah, it was a piss-dreadful game.
It really was. Sweden, they've got no creativity, particularly. And Ibrahimovic drifts in and out of interest.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
be
surprised to find out, you know, if and when he signs for Manchester United, he'll reveal that he did half of the contract negotiations during one of the halves of the game, just running up and down the touchline.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, short of like the international qualifiers and a couple of Champions League matches, he hasn't played a competitive game all season because he's been playing in the French League for PSG.
This is very true. And well, I mean, the rest of the Swedish team just look, I don't know, out of puff.
Yeah, yeah.
Not interested.
Although they've got summer league, haven't they?
They do. So, you know, it's difficult. You know,
in terms of being in or out of puff, their domestic players should be considerably into puff at the moment. Yeah. They should be, you know,
they should be well puffed up.
Yeah, halfway through their season.
Well puffed. So let's we don't have a particular agenda. We're just going to be talking about general things in the tournament that have struck us so far. First thing that strikes me is not a lot of goals.
Not a lot of goals. No. Nope.
Only one goalless draw so far. So there's usually been a resolution.
There was a weird statistic that I heard during the week, and I think it was about Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. And I heard somebody say that there'd been 10 goals scored in the first half and 11 goals scored in the 87th minute or later or something like that.
Yep.
And I thought at the time, that says a lot about, even if it's not true, and I think it must be over-exaggerated. I didn't stop to fact-check it.
Hmm.
But I think that, if that is true, or even if it was half true, then I think it says a lot about the tactical formation of this tournament, the kind of the signature move of this tournament, which is very much to sit back and play on the counter.
It's not tiredness as much as it is, you know, people conserving their energy and then pushing on. And then, you know, that's the thing is, all of the games, I suppose, have demonstrated that, haven't they? That, you know, as soon as one of the teams starts to push on, then the other team starts to get chances as well, simply because there's more space for them to do it. Let's talk about where there's lots of space to get in behind. Let's talk about England.
Well, you know, I was just looking up what England's possession percentages were.
Okay.
58% against Russia.
Okay. Well, there's the thing. I feel that possession stats are probably the most meaningless statistics in modern football. Most of the last season, Leicester had, you know, 40% of possession on average in most of the games that I saw. And in most of the games that I saw that they played, they won, and they deserve to win. So, you know, what possession means. I think at one point during the Spain game, the opening Spain game, they had something along the lines of, I don't know, 75, 80%. And it still took them until the 90th minute to find a goal.
England had 70% of the possession against Wales, which means that they have averaged 64%, and they have drawn one game and won the second game with a goal 2 minutes into stoppage time. Which I think is very significant, because, you know, there was a period, wasn't there, when we used to look at, like, Spain, and you get it in Barcelona matches still, where it's all, look at that, they've had 80% possession, 85% possession. But actually, in this tournament, it doesn't really mean
well,
anything.
There was a moment, there was a time in maybe the beginning of this century when people said, well, England will never do anything in international football until they learn how to keep hold of the ball.
Yes.
You're not going to get anywhere unless you can keep hold of the ball, which is true, but...
So now they've done that, but they're actually doing even worse.
It's figuring out how to keep hold of the ball at key moments.
And do something with it. Do something useful.
And I think that's been England's problem, is doing something. I've been impressed with how they have attacked, and, you know, they move the ball well, and they move it into good spaces, but their actual, you know, standard of overall finishing.
Yeah, they get to the finishing hasn't been great. They've lacked that kind of cut and thrust.
Yeah.
They've been very good until they get to 35 yards from goal.
Yeah,
and
then
they've ended up running down cul-de-sacs a little bit.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, ridden their luck a little bit.
Well, the thing is, you can't be as wasteful. I mean, for example, that Raheem Sterling chance against Wales which he absolutely... If had Wales gone on to win that game, 1-0, that Raheem Sterling chance, which is now, you know, disappearing into the mists of time, that would have been a big deal because it was so nailed on.
Yes.
You can't be as shonky as we are at the back and not take your chances.
Yeah.
That's the risk that England are putting them through. So they've ridden their luck in that extent. And Wales were very, very poor. I mean, I think if you were a Welsh fan, you have every right to be pretty pissed off with the way they played.
There was a lack of ambition.
Yeah. I think it seemed to me like they came out thinking that they, you know, they had been running the pre-match propaganda campaign. We will beat England. This England team aren't as good as us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems, and England's completely stayed out of that, and were like told, don't get involved in any of this.
Yeah,
seems like all that they did was psych themselves out.
That's not an argument that you can win if you're England and you're playing Wales.
Yeah, I think that when you've got Aaron Ramsey going, well, this, you know, the England team aren't as good as us, I think his mental process is, well, the England team probably are better than us.
Yeah.
But then he you know, there's a beat, and then he thinks, but we're pretty good too. Yeah. So then you've built them up even further in your own mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a foolish move. Yeah, I always think that hubris is a foolish move because hubris, it either makes you look like a bad winner or it makes you look stupid.
Yeah.
You know, those are the two things that can happen.
Take your pick.
And you've got your choices then. And I think actually that Roy Hodgson and the England players who were continually being asked about it did very well.
Well,
England don't always treat their media particularly well, or don't do their media very well. That's been a problem in the past. Remember when, you know, Wayne Rooney flicked the bird or something, didn't he?
Well, and he ranted at a camera after the Algeria game.
Yeah. So that idea of no, just don't get drawn into it. I think was
that is one of the reasons
why
I like this England team. Not I like them because, you know, they're the best team in the land. I like them because there is an honesty about them. And I think it's because of a maturity of management by Hodgson. And I think Hodgson is also a good appointment for England in that the press have an enormous amount of affection for him.
Mm.
And I don't believe I've yet seen a Hodgson should go story anywhere.
I don't
even think after the World Cup. It was just, oh, well, let's see what Roy can do.
Yeah, there probably have been a few. There have probably been people who have outrageous opinions for money.
Every week.
Yeah.
At the same time for money.
Who've gone down that route. But I think that in the overall scheme of things, we all know how savage these things can be and have been for many years. So
he's helped, I think, by the fact there's not an awful lot of competition in the English game. I mean, who is the next England
manager?
That's
the thing. Who
don't say Pardew.
Yeah, we've got absolutely
Eddie Howe, maybe.
Absolutely no idea.
What's he done?
Well, Eddie Howe, yes, maybe in 10 years' time. I mean, Eddie Howe's only about 38 or something now, isn't he?
Yeah, they're talking about him going to Southampton, which I think would be a mistake.
Yeah, I don't know, because he did it before, didn't he?
He went to Portsmouth and immediately ended up back at Bournemouth.
Yeah, because he went to Burnley and was manager there for a while, and that didn't work out well. And I am obviously somebody who thinks that managers should stick around. Mm. I think that a culture in which, we complain about hiring and firing all the time, but... at the same time, you have to allow managers to progress, and it's tempting to think that in finishing whatever it was, 15th, 16th in the Premier League, wherever it was that Bournemouth finished, that could well be as far as he can take them. I know that people kind of throw this out as a cliche. Oh, that he's taken us as far as he can take us, or whatever. I'm aware that that's a bit of a cliche, but let's be honest here and say that it's a possibility that even a bright young thing like Eddie Howe might have done the same with England. And Southampton would be a good stepping stone to the England job. You know, he might be a very good...
You know, you never know. Yeah,
he might be a very good England manager after next.
What I will say is, whoever Southampton appoint, don't necessarily go, you know, bank on it being foolish.
Yeah.
Because their last two managerial appointments have appeared insane.
Yeah.
Particularly Pochettino, when he arrived with no reputation in England and didn't speak English.
Yeah.
I think the last two appointments have been really, really first rate.
Very, very good, very good.
So maybe they've seen something. I mean, if it is
Southampton
anyhow,
isn't a football club that has a particularly long history of making sensible managerial decisions.
No, this is very true.
They've made plenty of bad ones. Harry Redknapp. Remember when Harry Redknapp was the manager of Southampton?
Harry Redknapp, I saw the a graphic with all the latest odds, all the latest betting on who was going to be the new Southampton
manager. All the latest Harry Redknapp news.
So I was about to joke, ha ha ha, where's Harry Redknapp? Harry Redknapp was on there. He was about 50 to 1, but he's on there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm 60 to 1. No, but you see, therein lies the rub. Is Harry Redknapp, warning from history for Eddie Howe, go across the south coast at your peril.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Eddie Howe. We're talking about England.
Oh yeah,
and Wales.
Oh yeah.
Where do we think that? I mean, England probably going to qualify, whatever happens against Slovakia. I'm going to put my neck on the line and say I think we'll probably beat Slovakia. The irony, of course, is we'll certainly beat them comfortably in the World Cup qualifying because that's what we do.
Yes.
There's no reason why we can't beat them on Monday.
I mean, Slovakia were pretty good against Russia.
They were okay. And, I mean, Marek Hamšík already knew is an excellent player. Slovakia have certainly been more persuasive than the Czech Republic in what hasn't been a particularly stellar tournament for the Slavic nations and the Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I thought Poland did well against Germany.
Well, they've got 4 points now, haven't they? So they're going into their final game, which is with the Ukraine, which is always a spicy little number. And Ukraine haven't really offered a lot, I don't think.
Not a great deal, no.
Are they the only team who've lost twice?
Possibly. I don't know. We're doing this all from memory, so...
That's the best way for football conversation.
It's totally not.
Mobile phones have killed the art of speculative football conversations because now we can look things up. Why let facts get in the way of a perfectly good opinion? Wales. They were quite good against Slovakia.
Then
they psyched themselves out against England. Against Russia, what do we reckon?
I think they should be good to beat Russia.
I would think so. I hope so. Because, going out as a result of England, especially, the way that they went with the last-minute goal...
Yeah.
Would be a bit harsh.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play well against England. Like, it's I've already said that the once. But they did play well against Slovakia. And Russia and probably one of the three worst teams that I've seen in the tournament.
I would like
so
to point
far.
Out that in our previous podcast, the preview podcast, I said, I think Russia are going to finish bottom of this group. And everyone went, ha, Putin will not allow it. But I was correct. I love being correct.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, at the time that we did the preview, did we know that they were having the heart ripped out of their midfield?
We knew that they'd had the injuries. But the thing is, it's Russia. You know, they've got the resources. They're not Iceland.
No.
I've heard a fantastic statistic, which was there's something like 15% of everyone in Iceland is currently in France.
Yeah.
15% of the entire nation.
It keeps the numbers keep fluctuating on what.
Well,
what
if Iceland get to the final, of course. Yeah. And they're playing as we are now. The Belgium and Ireland game is now finished, so we're about an hour away from Iceland kicking off. It's against Hungary.
Yeah.
They win that match. They got 4 points.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, another 20% of the population, I reckon, easily.
Yeah.
Led by Bjork. Of course, swan dress.
As has been, I saw put this pointed out on the old social media earlier this afternoon. This group is likely now to finish with the third place team on 1 point.
Yes.
It only needs Italy to beat Ireland and Belgium to beat Sweden.
And it's very difficult, to be honest, to see past either of those.
Yeah.
From where we are now.
So that means that forget your best four of six.
It's 4 or 5.
It's now 4 or 5, more or less.
That is
so
true, yeah.
You know, that's good news for Wales. It's good news for England, you know, because I think a lot of people would have taken any form of qualification as long as they get through the group stage. That is something that you get quite a lot of with the English, I've noticed.
What?
That nobody ever thinks it is quite important to win the group stages because it gives you an easier run afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are plenty. I think a lot of people who just would have thought, "Oh yeah, well I'll take one of those third qualifying places."
What I will say is about this tournament. When you look at a 24-team tournament, it looks really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're actually into it and watching it, what you forget is you can probably pick the teams just from having seen the teams. You forget about the mathematical element, and you go, "Well, if you name a team who are going to finish third, if that team finished third, they're probably not going to be the one who's good enough to get through, because you know we're not talking about the great wonders of the European game, which is actually why there shouldn't really be 24 teams in this tournament.
Well, I think the other third place that's going to be really tight. I think that's going to be, because I think that Russia have gone. I think Turkey have gone.
Very, very, very disappointed.
Yeah. And I think Sweden have gone.
I would say,
I think those three, there is no way back. It is starting to really now look as if Ireland have as well.
Unless they've got to beat Italy, which I don't think will ever happen.
But I think
never say never.
But I think it's 4 from 5. For third place, and I think those four, I think all five of those teams are going to be sweating. I don't think there's going to be any one of them.
No, this is the beauty of the 24, is that there's plenty of groups still where we don't have a winner, for example.
Someone is going to miss out by a whisker.
Yeah, and it could be Wales.
It could
conceivably
be.
But
it could. I think it's more likely to be somebody like Iceland or Albania. I've got a feeling that one of the...
What I will say is Northern Ireland have done themselves a lot of favours.
Yes.
Because it could be that having a win is going to be the thing that puts them over the
line. Usually, I've been looking at it, and I actually sat down and did a bit of, calculation at work during
calculus.
No, I sat down and tried to work out, you know, what the averages were and what the permutations were and try and formulate a general opinion. I did think that it was going to be third with a good goal difference, with 3 points would be enough.
Yeah,
I did think that. I've now revised that opinion upwards to 4.
4 points.
Yeah, I think.
So you need to have won a game.
I think you're going to need to have got 4 points. I think you're going to need a win and a draw.
In the 1986 World Cup, I remember there were Uruguay went through with certain number of draws.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think that would be enough this time. And, I think you'll go two draws.
And
bear in mind, like I say, that one of those places has gone.
That's actually, yeah, that's true. I think they went through with two draws, even though Hungary had won a match and they both had 2 points.
Yeah.
Because
they won by more than they lost, so they had a better goal difference.
Even though they lost one of the matches, 6-1. But of course, Hungary lost their first match of that tournament 6-0 to the Soviet Union.
So you know, it's I don't think that's definitely not going to be enough this time. I don't think I don't think 3 points is going to be enough because there's only one place.
Actually, speaking of Hungary, what do we think of Hungary the other day? They gave Austria. I mean, Austria were a team that a lot of people were talking up. I thought that they might have something to offer, and Hungary gave them a run around.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing Hungary again because I don't think anybody was expecting that. I think the extent to which there have been surprise results in this group so far, in this tournament so far, I think that and the Northern Ireland's win against Ukraine have been the two big surprise results.
I think that maybe the Hungary result was the bigger result, simply because I wouldn't have. I mean, people talk about Northern Ireland being the lowest ranked team and everything, but they finished top of their group. And why shouldn't they? I see this?
What you're getting at, but I do also think that just the fact that Hungary finished third in their qualifying group, I don't know, you know. You would expect more from Ukraine.
Yeah, they've been really disappointing.
You know, Austria, I know that people say that Austria have got a good team at the moment. I understand that. But Austria have had a bad team more than they've had a good team over the last 30 years.
Austria haven't had a good football team, really, since the Anschluss.
Well, no, they had the 1978 World Cup team.
They were okay.
The 1978 World Cup team was a good team. Other than that, yeah, I mean, you're looking at the whatever they were. They called was that the team of all talents?
What the pre World War II, the Matthias Schindler.
Yeah, team. The team with Schindler in it. They were. I mean, if they'd entered in the 1930 World Cup, there's a very good chance they would have won it.
Yes, very true.
But they didn't.
Alas,
no.
On such small margins. Yeah.
But Hungary have also, you know, Hungary have also had, you know, a couple of good teams. They had obviously the 1954 team and the team that beat England at Wembley, and then they had a good team again in the 1966 World Cup.
Yeah,
and again, you know, they were reasonably strong in the early 1980s as well.
Well,
so,
I mean, I think in I don't know exactly when it was, but they had some good players trotting around. They've always
had some
good players.
Yeah, and I just think that Austria and Hungary, you look at those two countries and you think that in terms of international football, they are countries of a very similar profile.
Yes.
Whereas Northern Ireland, in comparison with Ukraine, when you bear in mind that Ukraine frequently made up the majority of players in the Soviet Union.
This is true. Yeah.
That's a bigger result. That's a bigger surprise anyway.
Well, certainly. I think where do we stand on Northern? I was very disappointed by Northern Ireland's first performance because they were playing seven at the back. I know that they were going, oh, well, he's playing five at the back and wing backs. No, he was playing seven at the back. He was playing five defenders and then two more defenders as midfielders.
Yes, yeah, no, and I get why they did it, but if you go out with a complete paucity of ambition, I don't really think you can expect any more than the bare minimum that you hope for. What were Northern Ireland hoping was the best result of that? And a goalless draw.
Yeah.
Maybe to squeak a goal on the break. Where was that going to come from? Mm. And the thing is that Michael O'Neill really learned that lesson. And they went out all guns blazing against Ukraine.
He did. I think actually therein lies it's good management. It's been good management from Hodgson, who I think won the Wales game from the minute that he made those substitutions. from the minute that the Wales team, I think, saw Vardy come out, I think that they were already a go, you know, they'd already lost that the first goal.
Yeah, yeah.
In their heads, particularly Ashley Williams' head, it turned out.
I was watching that one at work as well, and I was about, I reckon I was about 12 yards away from it. It was on the wall, so it was quite a small picture, but I could see it quite reasonably comfortably. And at first look, offside was my first reaction.
I mean, no.
But then when I looked again and I saw it came off Williams' head, I was like, what was he even doing? It? But the thing is that, what was he, 4 or 5 yards out when that happened? Yeah. That's got to be the goalkeeper's ball.
Well, this is, yeah, it's true. But actually, I think it was Alan Shearer who said after the match, okay, it was a bad mistake, but in the first half, if that mistake had been made, would Raheem Sterling or Harry Kane have been there, stood between the goalkeeper?
Yeah, yeah.
In a clearly offside position. And he said, well, you know, there's a difference with Jamie Vardy was willing to take the chance to stand in an offside position for something like that to happen.
Mm.
So he don't play by your rules, Jamie Vardy.
So what has been the best thing that you've seen this week? What has been your favourite thing that you have seen this week? Of every single thing, both...
One thing that really made me smile was the second German goal. And I can't quite put my finger on it. I think what it was, I enjoyed watching the Germany against Ukraine match because I love watching Germany play. They are so competent and so reliable, and it's their reliability, which I think every other team has to aspire to, is no German player can do anything more particularly than the good players from other teams. But those German players will do it 9 times out of 10. They will do it every single time.
See, I don't like
and
them.
I don't like it.
The consistency.
And,
I don't like
yeah,
the,
I like that counter-attacking
I like the way the hairs on the back of your neck stand up when the ball gets passed to a player and you think, is he going to be able to control that?
Well, no, you see, there is, yeah, that has its moments too. I think it's the alien aspect of that element of German football that appeals to me. So I enjoyed that second goal.
I enjoyed Jogi Löw scratching his balls. And
I tell you, I feel very sorry for him because we've all done it and... You know,
have we? What, in public?
Well, not necessarily in public.
When you know that there's at least a
when
fifth,
you're
at
very
least when you know.
Yeah, all right. I've changed my mind. I have no.
Yeah, at a precise time when you know there's going to be a television camera trained on you.
That's sending pictures out across Europe and the world
live.
And you're the manager of Germany. Yeah, that was that. Actually, it was dim. His mistake was wearing trackies. That's why the suit manager, because the belt offers that extra layer of reminder to go, oh yeah, the cameras.
It's enough of a resistance for it to stop being a good idea.
Yeah. One thing I did enjoy, actually, was Leonid Slutsky, the Russia manager, during the Slovakia game, because he was sat on the bench going purpler and purpler and rocking back and forward, staring out. And he looked like he was on pills. It was magnificent.
All right, okay. I didn't see that. That was another afternoon, not another afternoon.
At one point during
so
the
I
live
was...
blog for that, I found the exact shade of purple that I thought he was going and found the hex code for it. It's on the site. If anyone wants to go back and read it,
good
it's
God.
On the site. You can find the exact colour of smoky bacon that he was going.
I think my other favourite thing of this tournament, and this is something that's just been going on Twitter, which is that David Hartrick of Imbeba Maradona and a couple of other things, Ockley Books, and he does Football Fives podcast with Chris Neat. At the end of the England-Wales match, he just he tweeted hashtags fountain and face paint.
It was
and that was it. And that's been ongoing throughout the whole of the tournament.
It's weird conversation about how you
will be found in a fountain some hours after the end of an England match.
It's a weird one though, isn't it, as an English fan playing Wales. Because
well, it's a no-win
fixture. It's not got the same cachet as England Scotland, but at the same time, it's a fixture that no English team in history has ever had an excuse not to win, given the different pool of resources that each country can.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you cannot win that fixture. You can win it on the field, but of course you were going to win it on the field, and if you lose. You know, there are some Welsh people having the day of their lives.
I saw a Welsh supporter on Twitter last week complaining because the last group matches, the Wales matches on ITV4.
Ah.
But I think that somebody pointed out to them that, well, what are you supposed to do when the population of England is 17 times the population of Wales? And then somebody else said, actually, in Wales, it's on ITV1 as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Wales, they're all on S4C, I think,
And on S4C in Welsh. Yes.
In Welsh. Anyone who says, I can't speak Welsh, so I'm not going to watch... Well, I mean, you know, come on. There are plenty of people who I've seen watching the tournament, you know, via social media, who are in other countries on their holidays, and they're not going, drat it, I'd speak not a word of Spanish, and yet here I am stuck with 30 channels of the latest Euro 16, can't watch one of them.
I watched a bit of the 2010 World Cup on Italian television. And that was terrible. I mean, they rocked up to the game like 5 minutes before kickoff. And then they had adverts in the middle of the national anthems, and like, you know, they didn't really care for it. I think I read somewhere that most of the 2010 World Cup was on pay per view or was on like Sky.
Yeah.
And the contract was, I think they had to show like one game from every group or one game from every round of group matches on free-to-air
television.
And
presumably the Italy games.
Yeah, and the Italy games, yeah. And you know, so they got a really raw deal. And I one morning.
Well, unfortunately, it's the way that sport is going, isn't it? And it's the way that sport in this country is going. And I think... Britain has managed to hold out for a lot longer than most of the other countries in Europe.
I'm going to say something controversial.
Okay.
ITV's coverage of this tournament has been way better than the BBC's.
I am going to say something very controversial, which is, I agree. And
how did that happen? I thought there was a universal agreement that ITV's coverage of these tournaments was never going to be better than the BBC's again.
First of all, they've had Slaven Bilic, who is... clearly a genius comedy character.
Yeah.
The second thing is the picture. I don't have a TV aerial on my building. So I've been watching them all on streams.
Yeah.
Now, when you go to the iPlayer or the TV streaming app that I use on my telly, you go to the iPlayer and it's got a picture that represents BBC Euro 16 coverage, and they've mocked up this fucking Louis the 16th prat-arsing about, all standing around in period dress staircase nonsense.
Right.
And I just want all of their teeth to fall out. Whereas the ITV, they just stood there, the presenters have got microphones, Slaven Bilic is trying to keep his eyes open for the photograph.
Or he's gonna just about to thump him right in the face.
Well, I mean, I think they're the only thing that I haven't particularly enjoyed has been Christian Karrenbauer.
Oh no, I've quite liked Christian Karrenbauer as well. But I just think that their coverage has been very good. Funnily enough, there's a conversation that I had last night actually. Was that after the Spain-Turkey match, I just left the TV on, and News at 10 was on.
Okay, yep.
And I tell you what, ITV News is a lot better than BBC News these days.
Whoa.
I mean, a lot, noticeably. I was only half watching it. I was doing something else. And within about 10 minutes, I'd put down my laptop and I was watching the news on the television.
All right, then. Here's a question for you.
Go on.
July the 10th, 2016.
Yes.
The European Championship Final.
Yes.
It's on ITV and BBC.
Yep.
Will you make the change?
I will do pre-match and then I will probably do the actual match itself on the BBC.
Okay. Is that because you prefer the... Because actually, I prefer Clive Tilsley to...
Is it going
to
be Guy...
It will be Guy Mowbray,
it will
I'm
be,
sure.
Will it be Guy Mowbray? Because it might not. It could be...
I don't know whether or not... Because it used to be with Motson and Davis. They used to switch a room.
Yeah.
So maybe they've got some sort of arrangement with Jonathan Pearce whereby he gets to do one occasionally.
Yeah, or...
I prefer Clive. The problem is that Clive Tilsley is likely to be joined by Glenn Oddle.
Yes.
Who is soporific, to say the
Astonishing.
Least.
Astonishing. I mean, Glenn Hoddle, I don't know. If you can imagine us two sitting here just droning in a monotone...
It's barely believable.
The 200% Glenn Hodcast.
oh my word, Hodcast. Is that a thing? Does Glenn Hoddle? If Glenn Hoddle does a podcast, that would
if
be
he
the
doesn't,
greatest.
If he doesn't, he's missing a trick.
Glenn, if you're listening, just a Hodcast, and I'll tell you, you're thinking, what's it going to be about? Anything you like, just tell us what you did that day, or. Yeah. A discussion with your wife about why you think you need a new lawnmower or what you think about
I'm
football. I want to know, I want to hear your thoughts.
I was hoping when when Joe Ledley got substituted for Wales in the week, I was hoping that whatever injury it was he got would necessitate the shaving off of that fucking terrible beard.
I don't know, I like the beard.
I don't.
The beard, The Welsh will be up in arms because they adore the beard. They worship the beard.
It just makes his face look too long.
It does give him a very long face.
You know, imagine if that wasn't a really really long beard and it was just a normal length and it was just a chin right the way underneath.
Let's talk about somebody else who's got shit facial hair. Raheem Sterling.
Ah, well, yes.
Now, just before we turn this on, and in fact, when we said we should turn this on immediately because we have opinions, I think Harry Kane has copped a certain amount of flack, and I agree he's not been brilliant, but Raheem Sterling has been... Harry Kane is just... he's been neutral.
Yeah.
Raheem Sterling seems to have been actively working
well,
the opposite
the thing
direction.
Is that a lot of the time, I'm going to... Going to be honest here. A lot of the time, when I'm watching the football, I don't really particularly notice how well or badly players are playing.
I will only usually notice if somebody's having a really, really good game or a
but
really bad
after game. The game, when they say, oh, so-and-so is playing terrible, I'll either think, oh, yeah, he did actually. Or I'll think, no, he didn't.
What's your agenda?
Yeah. What's your...
There's always
Brexit.
An agenda. There's but, always an agenda.
But with Raheem Sterling against Russia last week...
Get him off.
Within about 5 minutes of the start of the second half, I was watching it, and he got the ball on the left-hand side, I think it was, and I thought, he's going to run really quickly for about 5 or 6
in
seconds.
In blind alley.
And then he's either going to fall over his shoelaces or he's going to pass it straight to the other team or kick it off or something. And it was the kicking it off that he actually did.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, I've got to keep watching it. And every time it was the same thing. And, you know, and like I say, if I pick up on it first go, it's in
yeah,
me, it's,
true.
It's
he was,
obvious.
He was very, very, very poor. But, you know, I think Roy Hodgson made the right decision. The big question now is, does he back himself?
Yeah.
And start with Vardy and Sturridge again. It's because I think people were saying before the tournament, the Portugal game, we played the diamond. and didn't work. And everyone went, so that'll be it. Forget the diamond. I think England always play better with the diamond.
Well, the thing
is, every generation of teams.
The thing is that so much of the success or failure of football teams is ultimately underpinned by a fear of failure.
Yeah.
And if Roy Hodgson changes it very much, he'd have changed and that'll be that, and he'll get criticised for changing it.
I suppose so.
But
I personally feel that the diamond formation, because when Rooney didn't play in that Portugal game, the way that Wayne Rooney has been playing in midfield, I think has reopened it as a possibility. I think Wayne Rooney's actually had a really, really good tournament and has surprised more or less everybody. But I don't think it should be such a surprise. I mean, there's been plenty of players have gone from centre-forward to central midfield. And how well they do has generally been dependent on how good a player they were in the first place.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll be back next week. Second round of these previews.
Yep.
And so have an awesome week, and don't do anything we wouldn't, or do.
No, don't. Next week.
Not next week, no.
Don't do anything that we wouldn't do.
No, that would be awful.
But then the week after that, get back to
whatever you like.
Doing whatever you like.
Yeah.